Okay, how many of you know anything about chess? A little bit of chess players? Anyone know nothing about chess whatsoever? Okay, so these are chess pieces. For those of you who know chess, this is a knight, this is a pawn. This is supposed to be a king, even though it's a queen. But for those of you who don't know chess, you don't know that. That's a king right there. And the way chess works is you're trying to protect your king and get their king. That's how it works. And there's all these rules and blah, blah, blah. But there's one rule where you have to, how would I say this? To win the game, you have to take this thing. But I can put you in checkmate by making sure that there's no place you can move this. So I make something attack this piece, and then I protect all the other places that it could go, so it can't go there, because that one's going to get it. Or no, actually, though, no, the knight's going to get it. I can't go here, because actually we're going to call that a castle, and so then it would take it. So if I put it here, it's called checkmate. And it's this feeling in chess that when you get into checkmate, you're just like, ah. Oh. It just feels like, it's kind of like someone's got you in the corner, and they're just wailing on you, and there's no way out. So in chess, there's this kind. The idea is called checkmate. But I think that actually happens in our regular lives too. So let me tell you a little bit about a story I had. I was at a dinner party recently, and I'm going to change the names, or actually not say the names, because I want to protect the people involved. But don't worry, it was none of you. All the people I had coffee with this week are going, oh, what did I say? So no, it was nothing. But I'm sitting there having a lovely time, a great conversation, good drinks, we're laughing. And all of a sudden, I kind of smell this funny smell. Not real, but it's kind of this, like, the energy of the party starts to shift a little bit. And I smell something stinky, and it's coming my way. And it starts like this. There's a lady sitting next to me. She's probably, like, I don't know, 70 or something like that. She asks me, what do you do for a living? Seems like a normal question. Except she knows exactly what I do for a living. She knows exactly that I'm a pastor, that I work for Friends Church, and she doesn't like that I'm a pastor, and she doesn't like Friends Church. Now, she's probably what she would call herself a fundamentalist Christian. So it's just different from me. The difference is I'm okay with her, she's not okay with me. She's not okay with all of you people either, so it's, you know, it's common, right? So on the table, she goes, what do you do for a living? And it's kind of like, in this moment, I do one of the eye checks across the table at the party going, okay, are people paying attention to? Of course, everyone's eyes are on me now. Everything's gone silent. And I'm like, oh, great. So I sit there going, you know, I'm doing the math in my head, and I'm going, why is she asking me that, of all things, in this moment, with everyone's attention here? And I very quickly come to the realization, she's picking a fight with me. She wants to have something she disagrees with me. She wants to have it out in this context. Now, I'm a little different than you guys because I love a good fight. And this lady is driving me nuts because she's been picking on someone else for the last couple months. And he's a lover, not a fighter. So I'm connected to him and I'm going, you don't take out my friend. You know, she'd kind of make cheap shots, and then he wouldn't want to say anything because he doesn't like to fight. And I'm just, you know, hearing about them third hand, and I'm just dying. So, like, I am spoiling for a fight at this point. And I'm looking at this lady going, I don't care if you're 70, I'm taking you out. You're done. And then I had another second to think about it. And I had this moment where, again, I look through the crowd, and I see all the people there. And I've done this more than once. What'll happen is she'll take a shot, I'll take a shot, then for the next 2 hours, we're going to take shots at each other. Pretty soon I'm going to say something that was a little bit too far for the 74-year-old lady, and everyone's going to look at me like I'm a horrible person, and this is all going to go bad. The party's going to go from like fun laughter to just this like awkward silence for 2 hours straight while we argue. So I have this moment, I'm thinking, even though I really want to take her out, like, you don't understand. Everything inside of me is like, she's going to cry by the end of this. There's another part of me that's going, okay, Clausen, take a deep breath. It's okay. So I'm in this moment where someone's kind of egging me on, and I have these two options. It's like I can fight or I can keep silent. But if I fight, I know where that goes. And if I keep silent, And this one drives me nuts, like more than anything. Because if I'm silent, she takes it as a win. Right? Someone says something in your life about, I don't know, anything. Something about Christians. I'll say, all Christians are like this, or all theists are morons. And you're like, but if you don't say anything, right? You're at the dinner party, or you're at the water cooler at work, or you're hanging out with a bunch of people at the pub. Someone says something about some contentious issue that you don't agree with. It doesn't need to be liberal or conservative. It doesn't even need to be religious. You keep your mouth shut? It's a universal symbol for, yeah, you're right. So on the one hand, I want to fight, but I shouldn't fight. On the other hand, silence just says you win, and that's going to drive me nuts. So essentially, I feel like I'm in verbal checkmate. Right? I can't move one way, she'll get me. I move the other way, she'll get me. So I'm sitting there going, oh, this... Now I'm even more mad. So instead of doing what I normally do, which would be pick the fight, I try a third approach. I say, I work for a church. Like, hint, hint, let's get off this train, can we? Like, and then she does the super aggressive second move. She's like, well, what do you do for a church? I'm like, oh, crap. There's no way I'm out of this. Like, as soon as I say pastor, it's going down to the theological, you guys are horrible people, you kill children, you know, whatever the problem she has with me is, she's going there. And now, basically, I've put myself into checkmate. And you guys know these feelings, right? It's happened in any number of times in your life where something is said about you, about something you agree with, your religion, and you don't know what to do. You're in between... The one hand, you can't fight because you don't love a fight. You can't be silent. And the way they word the question, they put you in checkmate immediately. So everyone at the table knows what I do. She knows what I do. And she's just like, I can just feel her like poking me in the eye with this one, right? So I'm like, okay, lady. You want this? You got this. So I say, I'm a pastor. And I'm kind of like totally eyeballing her. And like the entire party is absolutely silent right now. And I'm like checking, like, and out of nowhere, I hear this big, and I do a quick eye check again. And now all the eyes have panned over to the husband. I'm like, and he says this crazy line. He says, so how do you teach your people to be fundamentalist Christians? Well, he doesn't actually say that. But that's what I hear. I didn't even see it coming. I thought the wife was taking me on. Now they've like tag-teamed it. Like, I swear, beforehand they're like, okay, so you're going to ask this question, then I'll do a big dramatic breath to get everyone's attention, then I'll hit them with this question and we'll take them. That's what it was feeling like, right? In his mind, fundamentalist Christian is no playing cards. Yes, that's true. No playing cards. No movies, of course. No drinking, anything that's somehow alcoholic. Every time you run into somebody, you have to tell them they're a sinner and they're going to hell. Every moment of your life, you should feel the weight of the evil that is inside of you and that God is not happy with you right now. Fundamentalist Christian. Okay, that characterization was a bit stiff. But honestly, they believe that. And I was a little cornered, right? I'm in checkmate over there going like, oh, geez, how do I get out of this stupid thing? And so we start having this talk. And the question I started asking myself as he asks this question, you know, how do you teach your people to be fundamentalist Christians? When he knows we don't teach you guys to be fundamentalist Christians. We want you to explore your spirituality. We have a value that says we think each of you are unique. You in a relationship with God's unique. You have to figure out your unique way of connecting with God and of living in this world. They know this. And so they're basically just poking me in the eye. And I'm sitting there going, what do I do? You know, I've almost transcended the conversation now. I'm not thinking about how do I fight this thing out. I'm thinking, honestly, what do I do? What have you done in these moments? Think about it. Think of the last time someone put you in that place where you're going, I got this option, I got this option. They both suck. So what do you do? Did you start a fight? Pull a Vince? Who cares if she's 7-year-old? Make her cry. Like, do this. Go hard. Or do you keep quiet? Just go, well, I don't want to have to answer for every problem they have with Christians, with Christianity, with whatever. I don't want to be the force of that thing. So the question is, are these situations truly a checkmate situation? Or is there another way? Is there another way out? There's a story in the Bible of Jesus having a run-in with fundamentalist Christians of his own. Now, they weren't actually fundamentalist Christians. In those days, they called them Pharisees, but they functioned kind of the same way. And the dinner party wasn't actually a dinner party. They were sitting around church or the synagogue chatting about religion. This is kind of what they did. And if you assume they were having refreshments, there's no refrigeration, then you're probably assuming they're drinking wine. So in my mind, drinking wine's a party, right? So Jesus is having a party with fundamentalist Christians. And suddenly there's a commotion. We don't know the whole story, but there's a strong parallel in the deuterocanonical book of Susanna. And yes, I said deuterocanonical. It's just a big fancy word to say it's not in the Bible. It's secondary, deutro, secondary, but it's contemporary with the Bible. So it happened at the same time. They just didn't pick it to put in the Bible. So sometimes you heard of the Apocrypha or Apocrypha literature, another word for it. We just like to use really big words to say a book that's Bible time, but not in the Bible. Got it? So the deuterocanonical book of Susanna. It's about a wealthy woman. She's a married woman, actually. And she walks out of her house one day saying goodbye to her husband to escape the heat in the cool of the garden. And she's walking with her friends, and they're visiting like they normally do. But this time she's not quite as on it, distracted. You know, the conversation usually goes nice and smooth. They go from topic to topic. This time it seems like when it gets to her, she kind of just like drops the ball conversationally. Someone's like, hey, what's up with you? And finally she's like, okay, I'm not into this. Guys, like, seriously, go home. I'm done with you. And they're like, well, that's kind of harsh, isn't it? She's like, no, seriously. Like, I'm having a bad day. Just give me a break, whatever. So the two friends are like, okay, whatever. So they walk out the garden into the house to go out the front door. And as the last lady walks out the garden door, she looks behind her. And she sees the woman in the garden reach her hand into the bushes. And a large male hand reaches back. Fast forward a little bit. Jesus is sitting with the fundamentalist Christians. And lo and behold, they drag that wife from that previous story in front of them all to stand like one accused, to stand judgment for what is a clear case of adultery. And so the fundamentalist Christians of this day stand the adulterous woman in front of everybody and in front of Jesus. And they say to Jesus this, in our religious law, it says that we need to kill this woman for committing adultery. What do you say? You hearing what I'm hearing? We know what the law is, and they're right. The law does say that. I know it sounds brutal in our day and age, but in that day and age, adultery had more to do with than marriage. It had to do with property. It had to do with all kinds of stuff. To us, it doesn't make a ton of sense. In their day, this is how it went down. So let's just assume it. If you were caught, if you're a woman caught in adultery, you'd be killed for it. So they know this. Jesus knows this. And they're asking them this question, with a woman clearly caught in adultery, standing in front of a group of people. I think Jesus was smelling that same stinky wind that I was smelling. It's like, oh, great. What fight are you guys going to pick now, right? And they're trying to put Jesus in checkmate. And this is where it's interesting. Because instead of seeing only two options, fight or give in, Jesus does neither. He doesn't fight them. He doesn't debate biblical theology or Old Testament interpretation. He doesn't meet them where they want to fight. But he doesn't ignore them either. He doesn't walk away. He doesn't allow them to think that they've won tacit approval. And we know that feeling, sitting in there going, what do I do? We have nothing to say. It feels like they have us all figured out, that they're setting us up for that T-ball moment where whatever we say, they're just going to pound us. And Jesus does something really interesting. He leans down and writes in the dirt with his finger. We don't actually know what he wrote, that although he did spend some time... We don't know what he wrote. I spent some time reading the conjectures. My personal favorite was he was doodling. There's actually texts around that time that said Jewish people, when they were kind of thinking, they doodle in this dirt. So I'm like, Jesus is doodling. During which they're like, Jesus, what do you think? What do we should do here? Should we stone or what? Finally, Jesus looks up and says this line. Anyone who has never done anything wrong, let them be the executioner. The way I see this scene going down in my head, and the text doesn't write it this way, but this is how I see it happening in my head. Just like the fundamentalist couple at my dinner party, the guys in Jesus' story have timed their questions well. You've experienced this too. They don't take you aside in private and say, hey, I have a question for you. No. It's in front of a ton of people. When they have an audience. They wait until the perfect moment, the moment when everyone's attention is on Jesus, and that's when the fundamentalist Christians say, Jesus, what should we do? What are you going to do? To me, it feels like a play. They're playing for the crowd. They want them to seem like, at the end, they're the good guys, and Jesus is the bad guy. So it's really all about how the crowd will react to Jesus. They're not asking him honestly. They're picking a fight in public because they think they can win. It's the same thing that happened at the dinner party. It's a setup, flawlessly executed. It's checkmate. But Jesus takes his time. He doesn't rush. He doesn't play it up for the crowd. This isn't about the crowd for Jesus. After he's kept them squirming for a little while, he says the thing that's the perfect answer to my first question. Does Jesus join the fight? Does he fight them where they want to fight? No, he doesn't. Does he keep his mouth shut? Doesn't do that either. He sits in that tension and then executes what I think is the perfect response. He says, anyone who's never done anything wrong, let them be the executioner. See how skillful that is? He's not answering their goading. He's taking them into another place. I think he could have debated them endlessly. They could have had that fight. Maybe he would have won. I don't know. The story doesn't tell us that part. He could have walked away and let the crowd think that he agreed with their accusers, but he didn't do that. Mere minutes after he'd answered their challenge, in a way they never expected, he looked at the woman, now standing alone. All of her accusers had left her. Jesus says this to her, woman, where are they all? Where are your accusers? She said, they all left. And Jesus said to the woman who'd been through so much that day, I don't condemn you either. You may go now. No one will kill you today. But please, can we avoid this in the future? What would you have said? Would you have let them control the fight and gone where they wanted you to go? Would you have kept silent? Would you have assumed that you were in checkmate, that there's nowhere you can move, you can't go one way or the other way? I originally posed this question to Jody Hartung, our kids pastor, because I knew she was working through some of these issues. How do you respond when you don't want to fight, but you don't want to agree with your silence either? Is that always a checkmate, or is there a way out of that? And she brought to my attention an amazing article by a guy named Brian McLaren, who said this is how he learned to deal with these situations, where he wants to show he doesn't agree, but he doesn't want to fight. And he's also not as smart as Jesus, right? If we were all super smart and we could like figure out everyone's motives and everything needed to say and know exactly what we needed to say to undermine the very thought that they had, we could pull a Jesus. But I'm not Jesus. Unless you are, we're going to have to come up with a secondary option, right? So this is what Brian McLaren says. He says, when you're in those moments, when someone's picking a fight with you, they're saying something you disagree with, but they're doing it in a way that you don't feel like you can fight them or keep silent. Say this: I think we disagree on this topic, but I don't want to talk about it right now. Sounds too simple, doesn't it? Totally too simple. When I first heard it, I was like, I'd never say that. That's ridiculous. And yet, that's why I told you my story about the dinner party. The fundamentalist couple who had set me up so perfectly, and now I thought I was in checkmate. Because the idea of fighting just would wreck the party and the silence, I couldn't do that. And I was just about to let them have both barrels. I was like, okay, whatever. You both want to take me? No problem. We're going on. And all of a sudden, this conversation with Jody popped into my head. I'm going to say it's supernatural theism, even though I don't believe in supernatural theism, but there's no other reason I would think of that in that moment. Because my first instinct is to fight. And maybe your first instinct is to just clam up and just, like, turtle. So I quoted Brian McLaren to them. I said, I don't think we agree on this topic, but I don't want to talk about it right now. And in my head, I'm going, oh, that's going to work, right? They just two-teamed me, like, I'm done. They're going to take me out now for sure. And the most amazing thing happened. Stunned silence. And not by the party. The conversation just started going, and they started talking about something else. It was the husband and the wife who sat there sputtering. They were just like, the husband was vibrating. You just like, and I'm having this surreal out-of-body moment where I'm just like, that totally worked. I'm stunned. Crazy, simple, and yet powerful. If you can't see into someone's heart and undermine the question by saying exactly why they're fighting what they're fighting like Jesus did, I think this is the next best thing. I know it almost seems anticlimactic, doesn't it? You want to pull a Jesus right in the sand and then like, pow! But it only has two simple components. You don't need to word them the way I did, but state your disagreement and then state you don't want to talk about it. Think about it. You got a work function and someone says to the group, I think all Christians are idiots for being theists. Silence? That's not going to work. Tell him he's an idiot? That's my usual go-to, but usually doesn't go that well either. Or say, I don't agree with that statement, but I don't want to talk about it right now. You can feel it, can't you? Just this weird kind of like, the energy just kind of goes out of the whole conversation. It's just like, go. And if he asks, why not? Just say, hey, it's not the time or place. Someone says all Christians need to vote right politically. I don't agree. But we don't need to talk about it right now. A view on gay rights. I don't need to agree, but we don't need to talk about it right now. Heaven or hell, anything. The line works for anything. It doesn't start a fight. That doesn't lead to good things, does it? The fights, usually by the end of the fight, I'm going, did either of us get any closer to God? Heck no. Did I somehow help them learn something, or did I learn something? No, because we're both entrenched in our positions. I just wasted 2 hours of my life. I could have gone for a run and gotten in better shape in that 2 hours. Like, what a waste of my life. And silence? You just walk away feeling kind of dirty, don't you? Like, ugh. I let that statement stand. I didn't speak to it. So the reason I told you this today is because I don't want us to feel checkmated. And this isn't about being liberal or conservative. No matter where you sit, there's moments where someone's going to disagree with you. And I think there's a way, and this is, I truly believe this, I think there's a way to make the world better by not fighting, but also by not letting a single person or a small group of people speak to the group that you are a part of. Too many people speak and say, Christians are this, because I am this. And I'm going, I'm a Christian, and I fundamentally disagree with what you just said. And I can start the fight, I can yell at them, I can tell them they're idiots, I can beat them over the head with the Bible, I can do all that stuff. And is that taking water? Is that making the world better, living like Christ in the world? I don't think so. So I wanted to tell you guys today this story of how I normally screw this up and how I had a moment where suddenly I did something right. And you can just feel the dinner party change. We were there for another couple hours. We had a wonderful time. The person didn't win because of my silence. And I didn't wreck everyone's day by having a fight. I don't think there is verbal checkmate. I think there's a way through it. And I think this line is the thing that's revolutionized almost all those conversations for me. So, I always like to give you guys homework. So your homework this week is this. Remember this line first. Can you hear me in this moment going, there's a line for this, crap, what about, something about something, yeah. Say it over a couple times. Talk. Say it in your head a few times. I don't agree, but I don't want to talk about it right now. Get it locked up into the neural pathways. And then next time someone disagrees, instead of just being quiet, instead of going aggressive on them and wrecking the whole time for everybody, say the line and see how it feels after. Because I think we can love people who agree with us. We can also love people who disagree with us. We just need to do it well. So have a great August long weekend. Thanks for coming out. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.